What's up? This is PR, and you're now listening to Respect the Game, the Slam podcast on Winner's Circle Media.
All right, what's good, bro? It's your boy, Pete Walsh, a.k.a. Lamborghini Petey. I know I already used that AK once before, but I liked it so much I had to bring it back. I actually did that one for my sister who just graduated college. That's her favorite one, so shouts to her if she's even listened past episode 5, whatever that was. But as usual, I'm joined by Abe Schwadrid. Abe, what's good, man?
Yo, I'm here. It's me, Abe, a.k.a. Bismack Biyombo, spirit animal.
I'm actually not mad at that one.
I just had to do something with Biz, man. He deserves a mention up front and center on this podcast. That's it.
Nobody beats the Biz, man. And, you know, sadly, our boy Adam Figman has moved on.
Dearly departed.
Left us in the dust. And
He's alive. He's just not on the podcast.
Yeah, he's not dead. But
possibly dead to our audience, though.
To show him what we really made of, we went and got the boss, Editor-in-Chief Ben Osborne. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. What's up? The only AKA I have is Ed, which is, you know, been used by many esteemed people over the years, but it's been mine for the longest. So, and I'm the first one on this show. So,
you know what's funny is there are some people out there who generally think there's a man named Ed.
I was going to say this. Well, borderline they, works at Slam. Breaking news.
they definitely thought that for a long time. So, I guess there's always, you know, a new 12-year-old's dreams are crushed.
Like, don't we get those letters that are like addressed to Ed, like a human being named Edward?
Yeah, some. I mean, I think most are in on the joke now, and I'd like to think they're referring to me now. But yes, I mean, over the years, there's been lots of people that thought Ed was a person.
Well, I'd like to think that too, but I read our Instagram and Facebook comments on a daily basis.
Yeah,
has there ever been?
We don't. Our audience is, you know, not maybe the brightest.
Whoa.
Maybe just not the oldest.
The podcast audience is super bright.
Totally. But the magazine skews young. Maybe not ignorant, just young.
Hopefully we don't get a memo from Dennis Page tomorrow to asking why we're trying to kill Slam sales right now. But has there ever been an Ed on staff in the 20 years you've been there now, right?
You mean someone with the name Ed?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Damn. Might have to bring that in the next intern class. But, you know, the main reason we brought Ben in here, because we like him, number one.
One,
we like him. Two, we planned terribly and we're thrown in complete disarray when Figman left. And three, you know, we're creeping ever so closely to Slam's 200th issue. And, you know, Ben is the longest tenured editor-in-chief at Slam. So, you know, we figured we'd bring him on just to talk a little bit about his history and, you know, what Slam has meant to his career. So, Ben, just how does it feel to even, did you even ever think 200 would be a thing when you first started in 1996 was your first year, if I remember correctly?
1997. It definitely didn't occur to me. And it's awesome to be here. And look, you guys brought a new, I mean, there'd been different iterations of Slam Radio over the years. People tried, but, you know, between Peter's organization and Winner Circle Media, like, you guys really hit the ground running with this thing, and it's been awesome. And I listen in the office or at home, and but there hasn't been that much context about Slam history. You haven't really needed it, but minus Adam, I come in his breach at least this week. And you're right, I mean, it's a pretty special time. We just did what we call the map, which is where we lay out the whole issue for our 200th issue. And, it's pretty remarkable. A lot of publications have come and gone in that time. And, you know, this thing started at 4 times a year, then 6 times a year. I think when I began, it was like 6 times a year, made it up to 8. With kicks now and special issues, we're basically a monthly, and we're still just pumping them out. So I don't take it for granted. You know, social media has brought a lot of voices maybe louder. So, and I think because it's 200th issue, like, I know I've personally been hearing from a lot of people, like, we have more longtime subscribers than I think I realized. And, you know, thanks to Instagram and direct message, they're kind of coming out of the woodwork. So, you know, we mean something to a lot of people, and we don't have the audience that a Sports Illustrated might have or have had, or some websites perhaps, but the passion of the slam reader, I would say I'd put that up against any media outlet, any sports media outlet ever.
I was like, going to say, like, I don't want to say I'm surprised, but I've definitely seen a lot more people like hype for Slam 200 than I kind of expected, like in our comments, like almost on a daily basis, tweets and like asking when are we going to see the cover and all this stuff.
I think people are hyped for the 20th anniversary issue. Maybe not on this level, but
yeah, I think the 20th anniversary was a big deal. But something, I don't know, numbers, basketball is like a numbers game. Sports are numbers.
Well, not if you ask Michael Wilbon.
No comment. But also even from whenever 20th was 3 years ago.
Yeah, 2014, right. I believe.
To now, I mean, media and sports, like, it's very ephemeral, I think. Yeah, like, it happens so fast.
What the hell does ephemeral mean?
Even I
gotta stop
like,
you. This is why you're the boss.
Like, you know, it's here and it's gone. Like, a web page takeover is here and it's gone. Your Instagram feed, it happens so fast. I mean, I guess we won't know for a few years if people's memories of Stephen Curry are not. I'd argue they'll probably not be as strong as people's Jordans were, because that stayed with you a little longer. But regardless, you know, print has something that a website or social media doesn't, and slams kind of stand for different eras. Our covers are iconic and memorable, and I think people are kind of grabbing onto that a little bit, and they appreciate it maybe even more now because it's so rare everywhere else. You know, like a Stephen Curry slam cover kind of lasts longer than remember that time he was on ESPN's homepage for 4.5 hours? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the players have added to it. You know, LeBron has always shouted us out, and Ben Simmons on our current one. And, you know, we've had the Jordans and the Iversons and the Kobes and the Shaqs. And, you know, it's just something that it's kind of like Kendall Gill. Yes. You know, it's each issue is kind of like a piece of history. And I don't think there was a time where we were just pumping out issues and the ads were huge. And, you know, our publisher, Dennis Page, likes to say we were like the internet before the internet. But in the more recent time, which is what I'm aware of, is the people contacting us and thanking us for the memories. And they're so glad for the issue. Then they can't wait for the next one. They're thankful for the last one. And I think that's in direct response to, sure, we love your Instagram feed. We love your Twitter feed. We like going to your website. We like looking at ESPN, Bleacher Report, Complex. But Slam is the one product that speaks to them that lasts, that they can keep on their bookshelf or rip out. And, you know, I've just been seeing a lot of people that seem grateful for that. And I'm, you know, super excited to have been a part of it for so long and for this issue, which is going to be really, really dope, you know?
Well, this is kind of a weird question, but just hearing you say that, do you think it's like harder isn't the right word, but is it harder for a player to get a slam cover now than it was in 10 years ago? Like, is that a place that is harder to get to? Are there fewer guys that are...
Well, are you asking, like, will there ever be, like, a Skip to my Lou-esque player, I guess, to grace the
kind
cover?
Of asking that, but also, like, are there, you know, this, we're living in a different era of moving magazines and stuff, too. Like, was it a little more freewheeling in terms of who is going to be on the cover, like, in between 97 and, let's say, 08 or something like that?
Yeah, probably to some degree. I mean, I guess, yeah, now we do try to make each one kind of an event because we do need to sell copies. We don't have the same ad dollars. But by the same token, I think sometimes if you take the right gamble, you know, Ben Simmons is not going to sell better than another Stephen Curry cover would have sold. But I think the buzz was pretty huge. But to Pete's point, yeah, I think the issue they were working on when I first started as an intern was Rafer Alston at Fresno State, the best point guard in the world.
Sick.
You've never heard of, was the little tagline. You know, that would be a tough one to pull off right now. So you're right to a degree, but I think, you know, we're trying not only to sell copies, but we're trying to create conversation and keep our brand relevant, and all those modern catch media phrases do apply to Slam to some degree. So, you know, I think we still want to do some cool stuff. I mean, 200 will be some household names for sure. I'm not going to do any surprises there.
Not totally, to be honest.
They're not household names?
I mean, the covers are, yes, yeah. But the covers, inside.
Oh, inside. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, I don't think, I mean, I think Abe was asking about covers. I take immense pride in some of the lesser known, you know, stories we've done, from, you know, basketball in the barrio to hoops in Africa to, you know, Franklin's high school pieces to, you know, Lang's famous, you know, fiction piece on Jesse Dunn. I hope I didn't just, you know, ruin people's dreams on that one. But no, I think the range of basketball that we cover, boys, girls, men, women, globally, nationally, is amazing. But the cover itself, you know, that's really where you face the consumer. And that's where there's always been, you know, you have to balance like what's dope, what's going to get comments, and what's actually going to sell. And, you know, I think 200, we hopefully is a good mix.
What? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nah, I mean, well, I don't know where you're going to take that, Pete, but basically, you know,
it's taking it way out there.
I was just, I mean, we've been kind of pushing, you know, the Slam 200 survey. And if you're listening and haven't, you know, filled that out and help us out, go do that.
I think it's closed.
Oh, well, whatever. It tells you how much I'm paying attention.
It got a lot. It got thousands of entries. So
yeah,
you know,
I was updating the results on a daily basis, trying to look.
If you missed it, you're an ass, really.
Well, my point of bringing this up is, I mean, I just want to know how you answered some of those questions. So, like, you know, the biggest question to me was, what's your favorite cover? So to you, I mean, I'm assuming that you voted in the survey. So what did you vote?
I absolutely voted. I mean, it's hard for me to remove bias, I guess. I mean, I put my first cover as editor-in-chief, which was Slam 106. It's LeBron James as the NBA logo. I think it captured a lot of, you know, it was the hottest player in the game, which we were often able to get when other outlets would have no prayer. It was a concept, which we've done a decent amount. And it was LeBron participating. I mean, this dude like gave us like 3 hours trying to pose like Jerry West.
Right.
I mean, he's not, people don't do that. You know, like he doesn't need to do that. We don't pay anything. So that was, I mean, I can't remember if it was, you know, Dennis Page's idea, my idea, Lang Whitaker's idea. Lang was out in Cleveland. Atiba Jefferson shot it. Melissa Brennan designed the cover, and
Medvedich.
Shout out to Melissa and Tom. But that one was very
early
special
shout-out
to me.
We
I don't
save
think
the shout outs for later, but
I don't, you know, I'm obviously in the vast minority. You know, people are going to go with the historic Allen Iverson Afro, which I was at Slam for. I mean, that one's more important for sure. The fold out class of 96 rookie cover. Like, there's no way my favorite is going to win, but you asked my favorite, so yeah, I answered. Yeah.
What's your favorite?
What did you guys vote for?
My favorite?
Yeah.
I think I ended up going with what I would have to assume you went with too, which was the LeBron and Steph. Or I'm sorry,
LeBron
Steph,
and Sebastian.
Bassie.
Oh, no.
Actually, oh, I didn't.
Got Steph on the brain. But yeah, LeBron and Bassie.
Okay. But like, is that a looking back one, or that's the one that made you feel the best at the time? Like, how did you?
Yeah, I mean, that I think for me, that just kind of represented like my Slam era, like where I don't know, just that just like encaptures as like a middle schooler, basically.
Oh, for sure, and like still kind of being close to LeBron in a sense, almost, and Sebastian, like watching his high school games on ESPN and not being that much younger than him at the time. Like now LeBron feels like 50 years older than I am.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of that is Sebastian too, because yes. I mean, personally, I felt a little more connection to Sebastian just because I was like a small point guard.
Okay.
I wasn't like, I mean, I guess Pete was like a diesel,
I mean,
6 foot six small forward.
I was the LeBron of Pleasantville. No, but not even close. I would say, I honestly can't remember who or which one I voted for. I'm going to guess it's one of these two, but my favorite of like the era that I've worked there was Carmelo on the roof with the Empire State Building right. behind him and him wearing the two gold medals. I thought that just looked so cool, and it just like it made me like feel proud to be from New York. Like it was like a certain time for the Knicks where they were actually a relevant team, and you know, Melo, I've always really liked Melo. I know he hasn't always done great on newsstands, but you know, I've always been a huge fan of him. And my other favorite, which is probably my favorite of all time, is the Rock La Familia with Elton Brand, Lamar Odom, and Darius Miles. Mostly because people used to say my game reminded them of Lamar Odom, and that is why he's my favorite player of all time.
He's just humble bragging all over the show.
I do think there's some. It's probably not coincidental that one of the first issues that both Pete and I worked on was the when we set the ball on fire and put that on the cover.
There's no NBA at all in our very first.
Peter and I, both interns, like, oh my God, it's a lockout. What are we? Oh my God, there's a ball on fire on the cover. This is like our introduction to Slam.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess what I was going to say earlier in regards to covers and it being an event is, you know, Drake was just on our cover. He has the biggest album out right now, and the only cover magazine he's done is Slam. So, I mean, that just speaks to, like, it still matters. It's still relevant.
Hugely.
It's still an event.
And yet, like, that cover was getting some of the most votes for worst cover of all time, which I think is actually awesome because it kind of, like, you know, sometimes we I don't want to say get down on ourselves, but, like, start to think, like, there's all this whack shit going on around us that is people are clicking on more or whatever. But it's like, nah, we have a very hardcore basketball, you know, readership. And even when we put Drake, who to us is very cool and to most people is, you know, having a moment with the Raptors right now, like we still have this super hardcore fan base of straight basketball fans, which is really what it's about at the end of the day.
Yeah,
no, you're right. I mean, I didn't really feel any... I was proud as hell of that cover, but you're right. You know, there was a lot of hate.
We were all super proud, but
yeah,
there was a certain cross section of our readers and followers.
You know, that might cut both ways. That might be deeper than just basketball too, though, because obviously, you know, there's hip hop fans out there that, you know, ride or die with hip hop that despise Drake. So, you know, it wasn't just that we, you know, committed the sacrilege of putting a non-player on the cover, but, you know, a sort of polarizing hip-hop figure. But whatever, he's huge. It was really dope. You know, they've more than backed it up basketball-wise. You know, Kyle and DeMar have lived up to all of it. Drake's on your screen all the time. You know, the NBA is Snapchatting or tweeting whatever pics of videos of DeMar DeRozan signing the cover. So, I mean, that thing accomplished... you know, everything you could want.
I mean, look,
from a cover.
I think, and I'm going off the top of my head here, but the three interviews he's done since and leading up to his album have been Ellen, Beats Radio, and Slam. So we're in pretty good company in regards to that.
Shouts to Ellen.
Yeah, why not, man? She had Drake and Kanye, and like none of the rap magazines and publications can get those guys. So I don't know. I kind of find that pretty funny and sad at the same time, but I digress. You know, we were saying before that, you know, you've probably done the interview about your career multiple times on several podcasts and radio stations, what have you. So, you know, if people want that whole spiel, then they can,
they can definitely Google it.
Do your Googles.
I actually just like, I think, or no, I know, you know, when you were probably our age, you know, you were getting much better and closer access to guys like, you know, I remember reading the story. I think it was, I'm going to butcher this. I know it. I want to say maybe Darius Miles, where they were rolling around in his Escalade with the red trim on it. I could be getting my players screwed up here.
I mean, it was definitely Stefan and his Bentleys.
And the Bentleys, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that part of that, I think, is budgetary, sort of. I mean, I think that we could get pretty good access with players, like, if we had time. And, I mean, there was a stretch where Slam was making so much in ad dollars that, you know, every feature story was calling for a flight, a photo shoot, you know, with a good photographer and a little travel budget. So, you know, the problem now is we don't get to shoot guys that much. That's not that they don't want to. I think you're right that, you know, media in general, there's like more asks and people are able to create stories out of much lesser access. So a player doesn't necessarily feel compelled. Mm. They know that worse comes to worse. If a player gives a 15-20 minute phone interview, most outlets are going to, almost any outlet's going to be able to make something out of that, you know, in this day and age. But, and probably there are some outlets that a player would never give anything more to because they don't give a shit about it and they're just checking off a list. I would argue that Slam could still ride around with dudes and go to their camps. And, you know, I spent an entire day with Rip Hamilton and, you know, all types of, you know, we great Gilbert Arenas adventures we had and Dwight Howard, whatever, you know, we could still get that. It's just, you know, now our staff is small and people have to be on Twitter and, you know, so I think that Slam
comes back to Twitter.
It's just like everyone is stretched thin and money has to be used different ways, which is unfortunate. I mean, I guess Peter, the answer to your question is you're right that it used to be better, but I don't really blame the players for that at all. I mean, I think the continuum with basketball players and Slam is as strong now as it ever has been. Like it's probably the first magazine they ever saw as a kid. Nowadays, maybe it's the first basketball thing they follow on social media. Their parents get it for them. Maybe they start to learn to read with it. They decorate their rooms. And I'm talking about players, mm-hmm. not just fans, mm-hmm. and actually writers too, which I'll get to in a second. But, you know, this is part of their life. And then when they get to high school, they want to be in the high school section. When they get really good, they want to have a photo shoot. When they're approaching the NBA, they want to get on the cover. It's like, you know, Dennis says this all the time, but I think it's true to some degree. The dream is the NBA, get drafted, get a shoe deal. And I'd say somewhere fourth or fifth is like get on the cover of Slam. And that's amazing. And, you know, that feels strong, as strong, if not stronger than ever, as the whole Ben Simmons, you know, experience reinforces to me. And then I think fans have grown up that way. And same with writers, guys like you, you know, hitting me up, super talented young people that love the sport, that feel good about the magazine. I get emails every single day. Like, why do you think that, you know, Adam left? It was very sad. But like, you know, we have Peter to step in right away, you know, and we got five people on deck behind him. So, you know, there's just been a steady stream of talented people that love basketball that want to be down with Slam.
Oh, I'm sorry, I threw my hand up. I was going to say
that. Waving at me in the middle of this?
The Dennis he was referring to was Dennis Page, who is the publisher and founder of Slam. So I just wanted to make that.
Yeah, who you absolutely have to have on here as well.
Oh, my.
I mean, yeah, that might be the last show.
You might never get to, I mean, be invited back.
We might just put a little mic on his lapel, a lapel mic on him one day, and just let him walk around, just grab that audio and make it the podcast.
I don't want to give this away, but there's someone that I think that whose career Dennis was very instrumental in, who helped make Slam what it is. You know, Dennis gets the most credit, but if there's like four or five people tied for second, one of them wrote one of the cover stories in the new issue, and it'll be a pretty big moment for old Slam fans. That's all I'm going to say now. But it's a writer who was as synonymous with Slam as, you know, more than any writer ever.
All right. You're giving too much away.
Whatever. Let them figure it out. But, you know, it's just another example of the history and the love. And, you know, I think we have it in a very, very special way.
All right, cool. Well, I think the fact that we have Ben here, we should also hit on some of our normal, you know,
nonsense
or whatever. I don't know where to begin, but one thing. I mean, all right. So I want to take it back to the lottery, which was last week.
Okay, it feels like it was a month ago,
doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. I watched the lottery live on a live stream on my phone, which was like one of the most depressing things to be like in a restaurant, like trying to supposedly
Okay, before you start, who's a birthday party or event or
I don't
want to
say
you,
I don't
want to
say
rudely
because
interrupting by watching the draft lottery on your phone.
I don't want to say because it's a sneaker brand, but let's just move on from that.
Excusable then.
Yeah. But I was thinking about this, like one of the I was like, why is the lottery like so weirdly so exciting?
I don't know.
But I think I think this is the reason is because if you watch like the NBA draft, right, or the NFL draft, and you also have Twitter, like you know three picks ahead that like Kelly Oubre is going to the Hawks and it's getting traded to the Wizards
like
or whatever.
Like it's the last real draw.
Like
it's the last.
Literally the lottery, literally when they take the logo out of the envelope, everyone is seeing this shit at the same time. Right?
I have a point to that too that I was thinking about and I totally forgot. Was why does Woj break the picks on draft night beforehand, but like the lottery, which is, you know, not even that big a deal, it's like super secretive.
That's why it's randomly
awesome
because no one knows.
Peter.
Yeah, but shouldn't it be? I feel like it should be the opposite. Like if the lottery,
dude, if he broke that, then that whole show would be pointless.
Yeah, great. That thing is a dog and pony show.
No,
man.
I love it.
I hate it. I hate it.
But
how
could he break the lottery? It's coming up on as a ball.
Well, but that happens at like 2 p.m. that day.
Yeah, they do the lottery.
It's not happening
beforehand.
Like 5 seconds before.
Do you not
know
that?
You know this. You know this.
You have
to
know that.
Stop it.
Stop
it. Stop it.
They do the lottery.
They do the lottery at like 2 p.m.
hours before.
And remember, Darren Revell did like a like story of like, I'm in the room.
Oh, then Peter's point is very well taken.
Well, first of all, I think the NBA is like, if you break this, like,
it's a wrap.
You're never getting another source ever. Like, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. But that's what I'm saying. Like,
but isn't that strange that the fucking draft lottery is the last like real beyond like the actual sports events themselves? Like, it's the last thing that like doesn't get ruined.
Yeah, but I feel like if the NBA draft was that way and it was reversed, it'd be so much better.
But okay, it hasn't been that way for 10 years.
Yeah, I'm talking hypothetically, man.
Oh, we're already doing the hypotheticals. Yeah. All right.
I don't know, Ben, what do you think?
I think you're right. I guess there's a way. It would be very cool if the first you heard of who was being taken, you know, came when Commissioner Silver announced it. I guess Woj has ruined that pleasure.
Well, I guess you could just watch the draft and not be on Twitter. But like, true. Who the hell can do that?
Impossible. I'll never forget the time we sat behind Woj at the draft in 2012, I think, 2013 maybe.
Yeah,
and he
13.
Didn't get up once. It's like it's a long event if you're there. It's like 4+ hours, and he sat down the whole time and was on like 3 phones and his computer, and then he finally stood up and me, Adam, and Abe just stood up and gave him a round of applause.
I love it. My favorite draft was the year our boy Brandon covered it for us, though.
Brandon Jennings.
Jennings. Hell yeah.
We should have him do that again, huh?
I don't know. We can't even get him on the podcast. So.
What up, Brandon? Yo, shout out to Nick DiPaolo. Make it happen, yo.
Yeah, let's do that. All right. Speaking of hypotheticals, yeah, actually at that same dinner where I watched the draft lottery on a phone, got into a bit of an interesting conversation. So this actually stemmed from a previous argument I was having about the MVP this year. So I was arguing with a friend about, you know, I said obviously Steph Curry clearly the MVP this year, and his argument was that, well, actually, if you go by the literal most valuable player, which is actually something that LeBron addressed as well, then he thinks that LeBron should be the quote-unquote most valuable player. So, but this is my question. Let's say the MVP was determined strictly by you remove one player from his team this year and how, like, who has the highest drop in win total for their team. So
you're killing me right now.
Why? You hate this?
I hate this.
Why? I think it's mad interesting.
Because the obvious answer is LeBron.
I don't think it is.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm into this.
Because
this now.
this was why I got into the argument, because this is what this person was saying. And I said, well, if you're going to do it like that, if you're going to do it strictly off of whose team would win, you know, X number fewer games, then you got to, it's like Damian Lillard would be the MVP.
Facts. Like the Knicks.
DeMarcus Cousins would be the MVP.
Like Carmelo Anthony, they lost every game he didn't play in. They went, true. They went 0-8.
I mean, John, you take John Wall off the Wizards, they're going from 42 wins to like 19.
Shit, if you take Kyle Lowry off the Raptors, they're not even touching 50 wins, let alone 56.
All right, so who's the number one guy of that category, though?
Well, so then you come back full circle and just who had the best season, and so Stephen Curry wins.
Well, that's the weird thing is that I actually think it might still be Steph because
73
is so unbelievably absurd that even if they won 52, that's still a 21-game dip.
And he definitely single-handedly won a few games for them in amazing fourth quarters. And, like, the Thunder game would have been an L when he hit that shot. Like, multiple games they would have lost without his heroics. So I guess you're right, but I don't know. I think
a guy like Damian Lillard would all of a sudden shoot to the top of that conversation. Because, I mean, the Blazers, I don't even know if do they make the playoffs without Dame?
To quote you, they're straight butt without him, man.
Oh, I said that?
No, I'm just saying you like to use the term
straight
butt.
I was actually about to say that, so thank you.
I mean, Ben, so your pick is Steph.
For the MVP, definitely. I think LeBron is... I'd rather have LeBron on my team, but if I was voting for this year, I would have voted for Steph.
Word. All right. I mean, I can't even be mad at that, but I think, I don't know. No, I'm taking Steph too. I'm not giving LeBron credit on this one just because that's what he thinks, and I'm not being swayed by that.
But look, any finals, well, the Raptors would be kind of whatever, but, you know, Cavs Warriors or Cavs Thunder is going to be, you know, absolutely fascinating. Cavs Warriors obviously would be the battle of the recent MVPs and the rematch and, you know, you'd get a very, very motivated LeBron James. So, you know.
All right. What about this hypothetical? Let's go off of that one. Let's take the current Sixers roster. You can include Ben Simmons if you want or not. Current Sixers roster. You put Steph on that team or you put LeBron on a team. Which version of that Sixers team is going to win more games?
Well, part of why I would take Stephen over LeBron this year is because LeBron missed a bunch of games and, you know, I don't think always played with the most urgency, and I don't necessarily blame him. Like, he was thinking long term. The whole way that he managed this year personally and with that team was like pacing himself, whereas Stephen was, you know, trying to prove himself, win another MVP, set a record. So that's why he had a better year. I think if LeBron wanted to have had a better season than Stephen, he probably would have. So if you put them both on the Sixers, it kind of depends on the approach that they're bringing. Like,
if
the goal is 100%, they're each going to try and play 82 games, and who's going to have the bigger impact, I completely believe it would be LeBron James.
I think I'd take Steph just because of the way the league is trending. And
I don't know. I just think
what trend has limited? How has LeBron
nothing but
value been
nothing
lessened?
But to quote myself via Pete, like, if the rest of your team is some butt, don't you think that affects LeBron more than it would affect, like, don't you? I mean, Steph is just going to do what he does. Don't you think he'd still average 30 plus a game?
I think Stephen would be easier to kind of, you know, double and take out of his game. I mean, they both are very good at playing off of other people. I mean, LeBron is an incredible passer.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the two best.
Yeah.
Correct, but, you know, Stephen is not passing out to scrubs. Like, he's always got shooters, you know, on the wings. He's got a guy in Draymond Green that can make plays. I mean, they're both amazing, but I think you guys are off a little. I think if you just completely geared on Stephen Curry versus completely geared on LeBron, Stephen would be easier to stop.
I don't know, man.
I don't know.
It's a point guards league right now. And, I mean, to go back to look at the Blazers, like, they have one of the best backcourts in the league. That brought them, I mean, albeit with a little luck, that brought them to the second round of the playoffs. And people thought they were going to be a lottery team this year. So,
that's a
you
good
know,
point.
You got to have great guards to win in today's NBA. And, I mean, I guess, like, the point Ben was kind of getting at, I don't want to put words in his mouth here, but is that LeBron has carried shitty teams to the finals.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
like 10, 11 years ago now. Like he's got, you know, he's got a lot of, I don't know. I might be
dating myself a little. And I mean, the Blazers are a good point. I don't know. I haven't reached the point where LeBron isn't always my, you know, answer as the premium, whatever the question is.
Yeah. we got a few minutes left. I just want to ask you guys real quick answer. How much are you loving the Thunder right now? I mean, I feel like we've discussed this in the office separately a few times, so it's nice to have us all together. Like, this team is just ill right now, and it's so fun to watch them fire on all cylinders. I got to really tip my hat to Billy Donovan for getting them to basically just believe in what he's doing, and for him to just say, you know, screw it, I'm going big, and I'm going out everybody after getting blown out by the Spurs. So tip my hat to him, and I'm blown away by what this team is doing right now.
Scary, man.
Yeah, I mean, I made the genius pick of them to win the NBA Finals last year, going into last season, with the logic that if you have two of the four best players in the world, that should go somewhere. And you know, Kevin got hurt, and Scott Brooks was pretty outclassed, which I felt all along. And I didn't necessarily think Billy Donovan had the answer, but you're right; he's been great. He's been creative with who he plays. You know, Steven Adams has been a revelation of sorts. Mm-hmm. And then again, you have two of the four best players in the world, and they're really clicking. I mean, I think they've been fun as hell. You know, we're recording this minutes before game four starts, but whatever, either, you know, nothing's decided to either. They really put the clamps on it, or it's 2-2, but it's not over when you listen to this. The series is not over either way. And they have a lot to be proud of. And I mean, shit, if they go to the finals at this point, you can't be shocked. And Cavs Thunder would be really every bit the theater that Cavs Warriors would be. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Kevin Durant is younger than Steph Curry? Isn't that weird to think about?
By how much? Like a year?
Like 6 months or something like
that.
Yeah. But still.
Nah, I mean,
Kevin Durant's amazing.
I mean, shit, I'm still blown away that Mike Beasley's played more NBA games than Derrick Rose. And
it's like episode three, man. You're going to hang on to that forever.
I dead ass still think about that at least once a day. I'm not even kidding. All right. Shit, there's a lot of other stuff I want to get into now that we got this rolling. But
you said these were quick answers, man.
Yeah, come on.
We can go quick.
All right. The last point I want to make is...
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, I mean, we got to be
out.
Yeah,
we
got
to be out.
Yeah, you're right.
It's this coaching carousel. Look, I'm happy people are getting jobs and whatnot, but the NBA has got to just break this trend of recycling the same old coaches. And, you know, I know Michelle Roberts. Is that her name?
Yes. I thought
I just butchered that for a second. Michelle Roberts came out and said, you know, the league, she wants to see the league with more black coaches and black owners. And I'm not going to necessarily make it a race thing, but there has to be better coaches out there than... I can't believe Mike D'Antoni is going to get another head coaching job. Like,
unbelievable.
Dude, you don't have to tell me, man. My team is the team that hired Scott Brooks without literally even speaking to another human being about the job.
I mean, they jumped on him like it was Phil Jackson leaving the Bulls. Yeah. I mean, are you kidding me?
I mean, that's
me?
The thing. Like, people ask me, how do I feel about the Wizards, you know, hiring Scott Brooks? They know I'm a Wizards fan. It's like, how do I feel about Scott Brooks in a vacuum? Like, all right, but how do I feel about them locking in on him and not even speaking to, not even doing your due diligence of, you know, talking to college coaches, assistants, you know, other guys, you know, guys from EuroLeague, whatever. Like, mindset is horrible. What's going on?
I totally agree. And it's like, there's been all this, you know, quote unquote revolution with stats and the general managers. And there's all this creativity in terms of how we evaluate players. And then you're just going to hire a coach in 3 days and not even, you know, not even try new people. I mean, the Rockets, who I make
unsuccessful
fun
guys
of, I make fun of what the Rockets do with some of their analysis. At least Daryl Morey seems to be taking this seriously. Mm-hmm. I think
correct.
D'Antoni would be a mistake. I'm biased towards my friend Steven Silas. I hope he gets the job. But the point is, they've spoken to a lot of people and people of different backgrounds. I mean, what was the rush for the Wizards? Like, you guys were coming off of, you know, a super depressing season. You have some talent, but, you know, I think a new view, especially if they're going to stay with the same front office, like, you know, try to talk to some people, you know, where's Scott Brooks going?
Not to mention that two, you know, also very good head coaching candidates became available after they had already hired their coach.
Yeah.
You know, playoff coaches.
I feel the same way about the Kings and Dave Yeager. Like,
yeah,
what has Dave Yeager done in his career to make
that you have
that
to
can,
that you have to just jump on him immediately?
Or that he can rein in Boogie Cousins or like get that disaster.
Well, that's the other thing is like, look, you know, we don't pretend to be, you know, GMs or whatever, but
no,
like we spend enough time around NBA players that like you got to get someone in there that they're going to like respect and respond to. And the half of these candidates, I just can't see guys that we, you know, kind of know and have been around a little bit. I just can't see them respecting like half of these guys that keep getting these jobs. And you wonder why they keep getting fired. It's like,
I mean, even Jeff Hornacek is kind of, I don't know, like what he had one good season and then, you know, his players basically threw him to the wolves, you know, by his third year. So.
Exactly.
I don't know.
I mean that one was mysterious. I don't love it. Phil, so we don't know, you know, if that was the seventh or eighth guy that they had extensive conversations with and they chose him, then, you know, I'll give him points for at least thoroughness. You know, at least the Knicks like took their time.
They didn't even ask Melo though. How about that? He said he was they didn't
he
even
wanted
ask his
to be
opinion
involved.
At all.
I don't know. That,
at
I
all.
Mean, screw the Knicks, man.
On that note,
I'm just making that coaching point. But before I forget, you know, we got Muggsy Bogues. We're about to
get this
interview with Muggsy.
What a legend!
What a legend! Also, what a nice guy, man. So cool, so nice. Shout out to his grandson, Fat Man. issue 200 coming. Can we say, or is it still not decided?
Couple
yet?
Weeks.
Soon.
Yeah,
soon.
Like June. June 10th around.
Finals.
Yeah, during the finals.
Bet. Ben, thanks.
There's
going to
be
us.
A lot of days off in between games, so we'll just be Slam 200 will take center stage for a couple of them.
Dope. There you go.
And follow it, you know, follow our Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all that during the finals for
Yo,
sure.
Figman, we miss you, man. We hope you're doing well.
Yeah, man. Come through the office, yeah.
Bum through. Abe, thank you as always.
Uh-huh.
And thank you to everybody for listening. Peace.
Peace.
That was nasty, right? I cocked that joint back and banged on him.
All right, we're joined now by actually very special guest. Very excited about this one is Muggsy Bogues, who is nice enough to give us some time. Muggsy, what's good, man? How you feeling?
Feeling great, man. Feeling great. Just came from a great bike ride.
Ah, very nice. How many miles?
Truthfully, only got about 4 or 5 in the day.
Hey, that's better than the three of us in the studio, man.
Combined.
So, Muggsy, you know, we were just messing around in the office before we came over to the studio, you know, just doing some light research, and we actually saw a video of your grandson putting some people on skates. Is he still hooping? Where's he at now? How old is he?
Yeah, he's 11 years old. He's up in Baltimore, Maryland, and with my daughter, being a student athlete, trying to get him to understand what that balance is all about. But he's a great kid. He loves the game, and he really takes it very seriously.
What's like what's his game like right now? What's his go-to move? Have you tried to teach him anything?
Oh, absolutely, teach him. He's quick with. He's got great handles. Great with the basketball. I mean, more or less just teaching him how to, you know, really get his teammates involved and how to run his team. When it's kind of, you know, his opportunity, when it's time to take over. Little fella got game. He play both ends of the floor. That's what I love. You know, he's a very competitive.
And we heard that, is his nickname really Fat Man?
Yeah, believe it or not, it's Fat Man. And he's just as skinny as he can be.
Muggsy, how aware of, you know, your career and all you accomplished, how aware are your family, your grandson, you know, do you tell them a lot of stories? Do you show them highlights, or do you let them kind of discover it as they get older and search the internet and stuff?
Well, no, my granddaughter as well as my grandson, you know, they know all about my career. You know, my daughter, who's done a great job raising them. But you know, keeping them involved and keeping them in tune with what I am and what I've been about, especially when they got of age. And, you know, of course, Space Jam was the movie they liked.
Of course.
That became something that they really looked at me as basketball. But then, you know, as my little grandson got really involved with the game of basketball, you know, I had to sit down and show him some tapes you know, show him a little bit how we play the game and how he and I are kind of similar a little bit, you know, and trying to teach him how to, especially be how to guard that basketball as tough as possibly can.
So, well, tell me about, like, the first time that they ever saw Space Jam. Did you prep your grandkids, like, yeah, I'm in this movie, or did you let them kind of have the surprise?
Yeah, I didn't tell them I was coming, when I was going to be on. They kind of were shocked. They were surprised. They're like, hey, Pop. Yeah, I'm Pop around the house.
Muggsy, I'm sure, you know, by now, you've talked about Space Jam and your involvement ad nauseum with plenty of different outlets, but, you know, I was just looking at the cast again between you, Mike, Larry Bird, Charles Barkley. You know, how much trash talking was going on the set and when the cameras weren't rolling?
Well, actually, the only one was on set at the same time was myself, Barkley, and Larry and Bradley and those guys. You know, Larry Bird wasn't on the set. He came on a different time. But, you know, a lot of trash talking went on between Patrick and, you know, Charles and Larry as well as Michael. So, you know, that's just the competitiveness of those guys back in the day, especially when when we had to touch the basketball. You know, Michael kind of really had a lot of things to say about guys need to touch this ball to get that power.
All right. And be honest, was Mike... You know, was he involved in the whole thing and really active on set, or was he just tucked away in his trailer waiting for his call time? Did he go prima donna on you guys?
Oh, no. I mean, actually, guys, no. He wasn't like that. We was all interactive with one another. We was on set. We all had our own trailer. You know, we had opportunities to go in the trailers and see each other. We had a lot of fun on the set. Let's put it that way. A lot of fun on the set. A lot of fun in the trailers. We was there for 2 weeks. And things that we don't need to be talking about back in the day. Social media wasn't around back then.
Exactly. Speaking of movies, Muggsy, we know that Muggsy the movie has been in the works, I think, for a little while. What's the latest on that project, and what could you tell people about that?
Yeah, we're just trying to continue to finish this. You know, the storyline strip, and see once we get that together where we can get out there and pitch it. I'm looking forward to it. It's been a great opportunity that's been presented to me. So, you know, hopefully we can inspire some folks out there with the story. You know, I got a lot of substance in it beyond just basketball. But, I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's something that I think the world needs to see.
Is it? It's a documentary. It's a feature film, like based on your life.
Based on my I don't think we're not gonna go the documentary route. I think we're gonna go with the film. You know, see if we can get this thing in the theater, get it played that way. So it's more like a film. You know, a lot of things. You know, my mom was a big part of it. You know, she's no longer with us, and my sister was a big part of it. She no longer is with us either. I lost her this last year, 2015. So a lot of things that happened in my life that, you know, it just kind of right time for, you know, me to share with the world, more or less, hopefully, you know, especially with these kids out here today. A lot of things happening. I want a feel good movie, you know, that, you know, people feel good about, you know, possibly, you know, can do whatever they put their mind to do, regardless of whatever they're faced with, whatever the situation is.
Well, you're a great role model for that. And who would play Muggsy? You got Kevin Hart lined up or what?
That will be an awesome cast to have him be a part of it. But we'll see. I know my grandson, he'll be one of them.
Hey, gotta be.
Yeah. Muggsy, you know, just to take it way back to your days in Baltimore, you know, your high school team at Dunbar was you, David Wingate, Reggie Williams, Reggie Lewis, and you know, you guys were just smacking people all and were ranked number one in the country, I believe, correct?
Correct. You know, you had, and you know, the late Reggie Lewis, you know, may rest in peace. He came off the bench. He wasn't even one of the starters.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's crazy. That's how deep we were. We went 59-0 those 2 years. Was number one in the nation. Actually, they got a documentary that's coming out for 30 for 30 this possibly, hopefully this fall.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So compare that team to, you know, the 92 Hornets team you played with that had Larry Johnson, Alonzo Mourning, Kendall Gill. If those teams were going one-on-one or head-up, excuse me, who would win? And I don't know. And what team would you play for is a better question, I guess.
Well, you know, they all became, all of them was pros. So, but, you know, having a high school team with that type of talent, you know, it's kind of rare. You know, it's just fortunate enough that we all grew up in the same area and had the same dreams, you know, going around in our head and had good people that was influenced us. That 92-93 team, you know, that Kendall Gill with Lonzo and Larry, you know, Kendall and Dell. I mean, that was just a great unit, Johnny Newman. We just had a great cast. Kenny Gaddison, guys that really came in and accepted their role. We was a young team, real excited team that was just trying to make some noise out there. And you can see that what's happening today with these young teams, you know, like especially with Golden State, what they're doing right now. They just been amazing.
Yeah, we actually had Kendall Gill on our show pretty recently, and he was saying one of the biggest regrets of his career was that team didn't end up sticking together. He thought that, you know, had you guys all stayed together, you know, kept it all together, you guys probably would have made a run at a championship. Do you ever look back and feel that way as well?
Absolutely. You know, Kendall, you know, and like I said, he was young at the time, and, you know, him and Lonzo and Larry, they was really, you know, had strong personalities. We all got along great. And in contract situation always, you know, dictate where guys, you know, money, where you should end up. But hindsight say, he right. If we all would have stayed together, I mean, we could have had a nice little run there. But, you know, like you say, looking back, what could have been, you know, always something going to be questionable.
So you mentioned, you know, one of your teammates on those Hornets teams was Del Curry. You know, there's a video out there on YouTube somewhere of you, you know, kind of playing around with Steph Curry at the age that he was still in diapers. So what's it been like to watch him grow into what he is now? Like, obviously you knew him when he could barely even talk or walk. So what's that been like for you to watch him progress?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just seeing Steph growing up and then giving him like a little airplane ride in the locker room.
Yeah.
You know, him being around my kids and, you know, them being growing up with together. I mean, we was a family type of oriented type of team. The guys who all had kids, you know, we all kind of gravitated to each other. And seeing Stephen and now watching him, you know, become the player, the young man, and the family man that he is, I'm just so proud of him. I mean, Sonya and Dell did an excellent job of raising him. You know, he has his goals, his principles, his values instilled, and at the same time, you know, he's the face of the league right now, and no one, you know, vision that. And he's doing it below the basket. That's what's amazing. You know, we used to guys that dominate the game, an NBA game, above the basket. Julius Irvin, the Dr. J's, and, you know, the Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kobe. You know, here it is. This kid doing it beyond the three-point line. And it's amazing to watch because, you know, teams are geared up to stop him, and they're still not able to do so. And that's what's so remarkable to see how he's able to continue to, you know, to take on that challenge. Got a big challenge tonight, for sure.
Yes, he does. Muggsy, the way the Warriors play in particular, you know, very high-flying, up and down, not a ton of contact. Retired players have been chiming in, you know, left and right on the state of the game now versus the 80s or 90s. This is kind of a two-part question, but, you know, how do you think the Warriors would have done, you know, back in those early 90s days when you were doing great with the Hornets? And how do you think you'd fit in the NBA today? You know, do you think you'd have an easier time, a harder time, and why?
Well, I think, you know, the team, the Warriors, you know, today Warriors, you know, the different rules, different brand, and way they're trying to play basketball. And, you know, there's always a trend, you know, back in the day. You know, everybody had to match up in the 90s, you know, with the Bulls. You know, MLS, you know, you had to have a big 6'6 guard at the two guard, you know, to match up with Michael. If not, you know, that's where the Ron Harpers and all those guys came into play, you know, in the East. You know, so we had those type of players. And then on the West, you had the Clyde Drexlers and those guys. So you had to, you know, we had the Kendall Gills and the Hersey Hawkins. So you always had to have a guy of that size to be able to, you know, to counter that. Today, you know, they get away with small ball, you know, and I don't know if they could have played that way in Al game back in the night because it was rough. You know, you was bit a hand check, you bump a guy if he came across the lane. Not saying they wouldn't be successful, but it's been a tough challenge, and you have to make some adjustments. And I don't know how long they would have got away with trying to play small ball, but it just didn't have a major place back then because you had different heights at different positions during that time. And the second, part of the question, the second part of the question, today's game, I think I fare well. You can't hand check nobody, and you can get places to where you want, and I think, but guys are still could be aggressive guarding the basketball. I think they just kind of parlaying it out there sometimes because, the fouls can be a little tic-tac to where referees kind of call it closely. So, but I think I fare well, and again, going back with the other, part, I think Golden State, they can play for a little bit, but I don't think they'll be able to play a long period of time with that brand of ball.
Gotcha. Do you think, if I'm not mistaken, there was no zones or, the defenses weren't as creative back then? I mean, you held your own and you got your steals, but would today maybe be a little easier? Like you could be utilized a different way on defense, perhaps?
Possibly, being able, the game is faster. Again, you can't touch many folks these days. Can't get underneath them, so. But I think the NBA is always going to keep evolving, the type of players that come in the league. You got guys at different positions. You got big guys who face the basket more as opposed to, with the back to the basket. But it all will change. It all depends on who wins. If OKC happened to have success against, the Warriors, then, you're going to have to now match up this team with three bigs and be able to play that style because that's going to be the team that you're going to be chasing. So that's how that NBA, that's how it always goes.
Yep.
All right, so Muggsy, you had a damn good, NBA career at being just 5'3". Did you ever allow yourself to fantasize like, man, if I was 6'3", I would have been like a first ballot Hall of Famer? Does that thought ever cross your mind?
Well, I couldn't think that way.
Ever?
6'3", I just didn't ever think that way. I never kind of wish I was taller. And if I probably did, maybe other things would start happening with my life. But I always just accept who I was and knowing that, this was the size I was dealt with. And that was it, But I never really dreamed about wishing that, I was 6'3". But I always saw if I was even 5'7" or 5'5", I would be playing above the rim a little more. we left that all up to my man Sputnik.
All right, but speaking of playing above the rim, I was just doing like a little bit of Googling, a little bit of research. It seems like nobody really can confirm or deny like if you had ever thrown down an actual dunk during your NBA career or maybe during warm-ups or something. Can you settle that for us? Did you ever throw down a dunk in a game?
I never dunked in a game, but I dunked in practice. I never dunked in a game. A ball comes off. I had a 44-inch vertical. Ball comes off. I could catch it. I just couldn't palm the ball, but right. I could throw it back in. I always either run up and dunk a tennis ball or volleyball because I could palm that.
Right.
But basketball comes off. I catch it. I throw it back in. But I never did it in a game. I always messed around in the practice and always did it, during that time.
Did you win any, $50 here, $100 there, hustling people saying, like, I bet you I can dunk?
No, I wasn't. It was just, for me, I don't know why I wasn't into that type of stuff. Showing off or do that, it just, the spur of the moment, just catch it. I always felt myself as a big guy. As a big person, I was meant to play this game. I was meant to, I always tell myself that, I'm just as big, I'm just as looking as equal as you guys. And I never kind of looked at it. And I always looked at dunking was two.
Right.
I always could have had to put it in that perspective, and always had to say, longevity landed up.
All right, but I'm sure that, being, as short as you were and being an NBA player probably came with, its own set of problems. Like we were just hearing today about how DeMar DeRozan from the Raptors, he got stopped by, the arena security. They claimed to not know who he was in Toronto. Did that ever happen to you? Like, here's DeRozan's like a big guy, at least, like, you know, you're more like a normal sized person. So did you ever have any issues with arena security or things on the road where they didn't believe you were a player?
Absolutely. It only happened to me once, though. And it happened to me my rookie year. Me and Moses Malone, we was in Milwaukee. That's when the Hyatt was connected to the Mecca Arena then, before the Bradley Center. And we kind of was walking across, and during the skywalk, it was a bunch of kids that was out there. And I decided to stop and sign an autograph, and Moses continued to keep going. And when I finished, and as I was going through the security, the man stopped and said, "Oh, kid, you can't come in here." You know, and then the kids started laughing. And they're like, "You don't know who that is? That's Mike." And then the guy felt embarrassed, you know, that he had to stop. I told him, "No problem, man. I understand." You know, but yeah, I did get stopped in Milwaukee to get the security guy. Thought I was a little kid trying to sneak in the arena.
Hey, Muggsy, I just got a real quick question for you. So, whenever I'm watching Thunder games today, everybody likes to talk about, you know, Russell Westbrook is maybe the fastest end-to-end player in the NBA history. You know, they say the same thing about John Wall. But I think one of my favorite highlights of yours is you were playing the Pistons. You beat out somebody to a loose ball, and then you were going down the court, and Bill Laimbeer was already at half court, and you sprinted by him, and he was like five steps ahead of you by the time you even got to the basket. Do you think you're overlooked, excuse me, when people consider the fastest players in NBA history?
Yeah, I don't understand why I don't get brought up with one of that. But, you know, hey, it always, you know, it is what it is today. You know, it's always current what they talk about. And I love Russell Westbrook. That's my guy. I love his game, as well as John Wall. Those guys are pretty quick from one end to the other. But, you know, you let other folks decide that. I don't get caught up in it. I know I was pretty quick. My opponents knew I was pretty quick.
Well, we'll say it for you, man. Bugsy Bogues should be considered one of the fastest players in NBA history. I just got a follow-up to that. You know, when you look at the playoffs now, two of the teams left are the Warriors and the Raptors, and those are the two teams you actually finished up your NBA career with. And looking at them now, did you ever think those two franchises would hit these heights and even be in the same realm as some of the greatest teams of all time?
Well, yeah, because they're great organizations. You know, the Warriors, for one, even though they got new ownership, other than when I was there. But the values and the core, especially with the fans, you know, the Run TMC days, they remember those, you know, great moments. And they never forgot. And the fans have been unbelievable. And they are definitely deserving to what's happening right now with the type of character that the guys they built on that team, because they're great character guys, you know, Klay Thompson, Draymond, Iguodala, Livingston, all those guys, you know, even Azili, all those guys are great characters. So having that type of culture there, I mean, is amazing. And I go the same with Toronto. Masai has done a marvelous job of creating an excellent culture, bringing in some great guys who's hungry, who understand what Toronto, what the city wants, and what it all understand, community serving them, letting them know that we are behind you 100%. And the fans are unbelievable. As you're watching the Jurassic Park outside, I mean, that is real. Those guys have been there ever since the team been existing, and it's just growing and growing. So I'm just happy for both organizations because they've been good to me, and seeing them do well, I'm just in honor. You know, that happened to be part of both organizations, you know, during my time.
Well, Muggsy, you know, you've been in some big-time movies, you know, Space Jam, the obvious one. I think you had an appearance in Juana Man, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah,
I think our favorite small-screen appearance of yours was in Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. You know, what was that experience like? And if I'm not mistaken, Larry's a pretty big basketball fan. So did you talk hoops with him at all?
Well, Larry is a big basketball fan, and didn't know that. And when he called and he asked me about that scene, when, you know, I had no idea who Mr. Davis was at the time. And then he told me about the sign. So I'm like, oh, that's Larry Davis from that guy. And when I got out there and met him and Mr. Richard Lewis, it was such a treat. Those guys welcomed me and made me feel very welcome. And, of course, they picked the right guy for that scene. And if you guys saw it, we had a good time on the set. Them guys are funny. I mean, funny is an understatement. And enjoy working with them, you know. That's what I love. You know, blessed to be doing this, a lot of cameo stuff, and, you know, with SNL, with me and Charles, and with Whoopi, Eddie. I did that. I did Hang Time with my man Anthony Anderson before he got going. So a lot of things that I've been involved in, you know, and just been happy and been blessed that, you know, little kid from inner city of Baltimore able to find his way through basketball through some other avenues.
Yeah, I think that's a good note to end, but, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about, you know, Slam and the impact on your career. We're about to hit our 200th issue. Is coming soon. You know, you've actually been featured 3 times throughout the years in some big articles. So can you just talk a little bit about, you know, the impact Slam had on your career and any thoughts you have on Slam as, in general?
Well, Slam, you know, one of the major magazines out there, you guys have been excellent. I mean, considering to continue to expose and give the people who serve them and the knowledge about an individual and about the sports and about the things that folks involved in has been remarkable. So I really appreciate to have the opportunity to continue to, you know, share my testimony with you all. I mean, I'm trying to continue to work my way and with the community, give back. I have a nonprofit, Always Believe, that I kind of set up here in Charlotte, where we kind of mentor after school kids, well, after school programs, and got a middle school and a high school that we adopted because we want to make sure they understand the importance of continuing to keep studying your reading, your math, your science, and keep those values because after school, we know that idle time is where it becomes very, you know, challenging for them. And so we try to give them a, you know, a little safe haven place where they can be able to go and better themselves. So, you know, you guys have been a platform for me, so I thank you for that.
You're the man, Muggsy, and maybe we'll get your grandson in those pages in a couple of years.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, you be good, man. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Oh, real quick, who's your finals pick?
I knew you was going to get to it.
We have to.
Even though I started off with Cleveland, you know, even though I had Golden, my heart is with Golden State, you know, and I love the Raptors of what they're doing right now, you know, but God so might, I just think that, you know, Cleveland got something. If they get back to playing the way they were, I think they possibly going to pull this thing out this year.
All right.
All right, you're the man. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys.
All right, take care.
Russ, did you guys lose this game or did the Jazz win this one?
What? Bro, what are you talking about, man? Bro, I'm out, man. That nigga's tripping.